Ah, that should do it. Okay. So what I'd like to do today, as I've done before, but this week is Parshas Vayeshev, so I picked out a few pieces for us to work through together, some from the Medrash Rabbah on this Parsha, and a couple of Gur Aryeh's. So we'll go from the relatively simple and straightforward, and hopefully work through some little bit more complex analysis. Okay, so on this first page, page Mem, what's happening here, we're in the part of the Parsha which is the transition between these. We have this interruption, all of a sudden, this interlude where Yehuda and Tamar, and then we go back to Yosef, the story of Yosef as he's in Mitzrayim. Okay, so we know that Eshes Potiphar tried to seduce Yosef, and the Medrash will get into an aspect of it in the paragraph that begins Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman Omar. Okay, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman Omar, why is the story of Eshes Potiphar placed where it is after the story of the incident of Tamar and Yehuda? Kedei lismoch maasei Tamar im Yehuda. According to this opinion, the idea is to make a connection. Lamaasei ishto shel Potiphar. This particular piece of Mishnah of Medrash is going to attempt to say that they had the same motive, a motive l'shem shemayim. Okay, but and by the way, all of this is open to discussion, and your input is appreciated. But we'll see. According to this particular view of the Medrash, they set out right away to place the Eshes Potiphar in a positive light somehow. Okay? So,
well, if Eshes Potiphar is positive, then Yosef is more positive.
Why is that? Well, he of course he's positive. He's positive under any circumstances. Okay? Although, the same Medrash would argue that it was pretty close. It was a close call. Okay? So Kedei lismoch maaseh Tamar im Yehuda, lamaaseh ishto shel Potiphar im Yosef. To make a parallel, a connection. Ho'amur lahalon behechshek sipuro shel Yosef, which is the story which is to be laid out in about this incident in the story of Yosef. Ukedei lomar lecha, and it's placed, it's the placement of the stories is to tell you mazu Tamar vaday l'shem shemayim, just as Tamar's motives were l'shem shemayim vaday, it says here, for sure in this kavno, her intent was definitely a pure one. Kedei leholid bonim me Yehuda, because she wanted to have children with Yehuda, v'shehaya chayav mipnei nohagam liyavama, and because he was supposed to do whatever whether it resembles the yibum of today or not, it's some form of yibum that according to their custom that of Yibum, that he was supposed to be the one, and she did what she did in order to ensure that Yehuda was the one who carried it out. Afzu, just as Tamar's motives were noble, Afzu Eshes Potiphar l'shem shemayim, so too were the motives of Potiphar's wife also for the sake of heaven, Niskavno, that was her intent. Okay, in what sense? That's right. That's right. Well, okay. Okay, well, the Medrash is going, this paragraph is going to suggest a possible reason why it should be so. Okay? Okay. Her intent was also kedei leholid bonim min hatzadik hazeh, that she also, her motive was to produce children, or a child, from this tzaddik, meaning Yosef. Ukamo, da'amar Rav Yeshua ben Levi, as Rav Yeshua ben Levi said, ro'ah hoysa, eshes Potiphar. Potiphar's wife saw what? She saw how? B'mazolo, according to her astrology, as we'll see in a moment, shebein ha-kochavim b'ma'arochosom, according to the constellations, the stars, kishehoyso shoeles b'itztaroglin, when she consulted the astrologers, b'chosei ha-kochavim, the stargazers shelo, her, you know, everybody, especially officials, had their own astrologers. It goes to today, especially in Asia and in.
That's who Reagan had.
I'm saying it's not an uncommon phenomenon for leaders who have to make difficult decisions to consult astrologers. It still goes on today, or they'll read their horoscope in the paper or something like that. Okay. Shehi. So according to what the astrologers told her, Shehi Asida Lahaamid Mimenu Bain, that they told her she was going to have a child with him. Velo Haisa Yodas, but it was unclear to them, meaning to her, if it was unclear to her, is because they were less than perfectly clear in their prediction, in Mimena Atzma, if it would be she herself who would produce that child, who Ya'amid Es Habein, that he would have a son from her, or would it be from her daughter? Who's her daughter? Shehare Ein Jose Hakochavim ro'im li'olam davar barur, because astrologers, when they make their predictions, they don't see perfectly clearly. Their predictive ability is not 100%. Yeah, I mean, I think Rabbi Levine has discussed this before, but today's astrology columns are obviously garbage, and all these people who you could pay a nice sum of money for them to tell your fortune, are obviously it's baloney. But if Chazal regarded astrology as something valid, one explanation is that in time, especially Egypt, which is the capital of such business, that it was their science. It was a highly developed science at that point. But that there was some validity to it. Otherwise, Chazal wouldn't ascribe anything at all to it. But of course, the knowledge of ancient Egypt.
He says that Avram had also looked at astrology, and he was an astrologer.
Actually, it says he went up into this. Yeah. He was taken up into the stars, which is a little different. Which is a little different perspective from being down here and looking up. The first astronaut, right? But anyway, since lots of the knowledge of ancient Egypt has been lost. That's why we don't know how the pyramids were built, for example. So similarly, you could argue that their knowledge of astrology was more advanced, and it's simply that knowledge was lost, and therefore, while it had validity at some point, it no longer does. But in any case, just like Nevuah, we say that the Nevuah of anyone other than Moshe Rabbeinu did not have that aspaklario hame'ira, didn't have that perfectly clear prophetic vision. So similarly, the astrologers did not have, they had some idea, but not a perfectly clear one. So when they said Yosef would have a child somehow or other through her, so they didn't know whether, they couldn't tell her for sure whether it was through her, or through her daughter. And therefore, naturally, she decided to take matters into her own hands, so to speak. This is what the Navi says in Yeshayahu. Zehu shamar hakasuv, chovrei shamayim, those who observe the heavens, achozim bakochavim, the stargazers, modiim lachodoshim, those who do the monthly prediction based on the constellation of the month. We know the sign of the zodiac, there's a sign for each month, and Chazal have the same system going. Me'asher yavo'u olechos, who predict events that are going to happen to you. So the next line here is just a translation or an explanation of the pasuk. Hatsofim elashamayim, those who look into the heavens, v'roim bakokovim, and see the stars, migalim lefi mazalos hakodeshim, look at the monthly constellation, and the sign of the month, the zodiac sign, mima sheyavor olecha, in order to predict what's going to happen with you. Okay, so in other words, the Navi makes a reference, but it's not a positive reference. It's a reference that basically is saying that they don't really understand what's going to happen. They don't have that clear vision that we talked about. The Ka'asher, Rav Ivu, Omar, Me'asher, the Pasuk, he darshens into the Pasuk because it says, Modi'im Bachodashim, Me'asher Yavo Olav, Velo Kol Asher. You've seen such a drasha in other things, in other halachas, where may means some of, but not all of. So, predictability of some of those events, but not all of those events. Hem yodim legalos rak miktsas. They can only predict partially mimashe yehyeh, of what will be in the future. Velo kol asher yehyeh, and not all. Vehi chashva shehadavor yiskayem ba beatzma, and she, I'm going to say, wanted to think that it would come about through her, and that's according to this opinion why she acted the way she did. And she wanted to make it happen. Yeah. Okay. Uba'a olav bigasus. And she made advances to him aggressively. In order to make this happen. Aval lo hiskavna l'shem znus bilvad. Keyword there, bilvad. But it wasn't just out of znus only, okay. Ula besof hiskayem hatovor bevita, and in the end, it came about through her daughter. She nasa Yosef as osnas bas Potiphera, who is understood to be Potiphar, who Potiphera, okay. Okay, so that assumes that we know for sure that Asnas is her daughter, and then we have we're getting into conflicting midrash, because Asnas was also, according to some, the abandoned child of Dina, right? So right away we have some conflicts, but I want to suggest so.
It says,
so that is that hers?
No,
it's not it, hers. No, it says Gadol, whoever raises a child like that, yeah. It's like they gave birth.
Yeah, I mean legally probably, but
it's a Chazal. Yeah.
Right, among many. Yeah. Okay, and that's my. You know, I find myself, you know, when I'm repeating things, to my family, and I say, and I'm finding myself more and more using Rabbi Levine's expression, "I am panim l'Torah," because you're always going to get into conflict. So let me just cloud the issue a little bit more. really, l'shem shamayim? Seriously? When you read the psukim, does it sound like that? It sounds like she she did what she did to entrap him. And we'll get into more of that later. So, absolutely. Yeah, she definitely had her eye on it. We'll talk more about that in another piece. But I know of another medrash, I think in Esther Rabbah, where she is referred to as the Dubis. That's not Yiddish, that's Hebrew. That's the she-bear, which means she was a predator. Okay.
Rashi uses that expression.
Yeah, well, it's, okay, that's from Chazal. Mm-hmm. She was a predator, which suggests that her motive was not pure.
Even he says it's not entirely
true. Because you have to say that. You can't go all altruistic here, can you? I mean, this is to say that she's just like Tamar is a bit straining incredulity. Yeah. Okay. And let me ask you another question. If her motive was pure and she didn't succeed that time, why'd she snitch? Why did she?
Afraid he'd go to somebody else. She didn't want that.
How do you know? I don't know.
She offered him everything and he didn't do it. So either he was gay.
That's. Well, okay. You've been watching too much TV. No, but obviously the simplest answer to that question is. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, right? I mean that's the obvious answer. So why go all the way out on a limb to suggest these altruistic motives? Then we have a very similar machlokas, I would point out, with Lot's daughters. What was their motivation? So it's a machlokas in the Medrash. Was their motivation because, oh my God, we're the last people on earth and we have to repopulate the earth and all that, which a little strange. I think we discussed that back in that parsha. Or was it not l'shem shemayim? Was it just l'shem znus?
There's a difference between Lot and his daughters and here. Very simple.
Okay.
Lot was an old fool who was drunk at the time. While here you have, as they say, a good-looking stud.
A young stud. That's right. Exactly right. But still. But still, I'm just bringing up that example to point out that the sort of machlokas as to motivation is brought out in other instances as well. So I'm just saying that there's two sides to this. There's not just the side that's presented here. There are other sides to the issue of what's my motivation? You know, that's the method acting line. Okay, so just wanted to start out with a really... Simple idea. Okay, let's go to the next page, the one that says Nun Ches at the top. Okay, it says later, it says when Yosef marries, it says he married as Osnas Bas Potiphera Kohen On. So Potiphar and Potiphera is interpreted as the same person. You don't have to say that, but it's suggested. Because, you know, who's this person? Who's this woman that he, out of the blue, he marries? You know, was there a reason why he chose this particular one? So there, if you make the linkage, then you make the linkage to the other parts of the story as well.
And the question is, how did Yosef get along with his new mother?
That's the beginning of mother-in-law.
Well, he
didn't get along.
Yeah, obviously, there's no evidence that she came to visit him in the slammer, right? Okay. Anyway, it depends on how you understand the story. Yeah, look at the Mefarshim around that incident, and you'll see what they say. The whole business, she was like a groupie up on the wall, and through her necklace, whatever it was that she had. whatever it was that she had, that she wore, she threw that down, and he read it, and it was Hebrew, so he knew that there was something, some connection there that he should pursue. That's how it works. Okay, now, in page Nun Ches, we have the story of Yehuda and Tamar, okay, which is a really fascinating story. Okay, so it says at this point in the story, and we'll be hitting the story at its very beginning later on, but right now, Vayaker Yehuda Vayomer Tzadka Mimeni. This was already when she was discovered to be pregnant, and there was a trial, and she was going to be executed, but she had the objects that that he had, the collateral that he had given her, and she then produced that, and then and she says and she said the father is whoever belongs to these things, but she didn't name him, and then Yehuda comes forward and says he recognized the objects, he recognized the truth that it was he, and he says, "You are right, Tzadkah. You are more righteous, me many, than me." Okay, now the Midrash is going to analyze that statement. Acharei Amar Tzadkah, he already says, "You're right." You know, it's, in other words, you can put a comma after, instead of saying Tzadkah me many, say Tzadkah, comma. That would be enough. Then the extra word is mimeni in this. That's one way to read it, but you don't have to read it. She says, and you could say, "You're right. You're right." He says, "Sadka alma shehi shamra haker na lemi hachosemes." She says, "Take a look," and she's obviously speaking to him. "Take a look to whom this belongs." And he lo hayotzarik kavar lehosif klum. He did not have to say mimeni. He could have said, "What do you mean? You're more right than I." You don't have to say "than I." You're right. Such a, you're right. And then he comes forward and confesses that it is he and that she's innocent. Or the pasuk could have phrased, or his words could have been, "O lamar sheli, they're mine." He could have said, "They're mine." "Behu amar mi meni, from me, or than me." So, what's really going on here? The af shev shorla foresh mi meni ba'u eleha hachafotzim ha'ela. These objects came from me, but none of these phrases are used. Just it says tzadka mi meni aval hadavor misparesh. Gam, but it can be explained also as mimeni himeuberes, right? So it's not the objects that are mine, but he's saying the baby is mine. That's really what it's saying here. Okay, but, however, there's a problem if you understand it that way, because v'zeh davor she'ein lihuda das bebirur. How does he know? He knows he had relations with her. But how does he know that it's his baby? There was a DNA test or what? How does he know?
He thought she was his own, so it could have been...
No, but he knows it. It's because he didn't know who it was. Now he knows it's Tamar, right? His daughter-in-law. Now he knows who it is. And
yeah,
that
he knows that she wasn't his own.
And he, right. He knows that. Although... Isn't it possible that she could have and could have gotten pregnant through someone else? How does he know for sure that it's his? So how could he say, according to that explanation, how could he say me many that I'm the baby daddy? He doesn't know that, right? Rabbi Yirmiyah, b'shem Rabbi Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok, said as follows: b'shlosha mekomos matzonu. There are three instances in Tanakh. Asher hofia ruach hakodesh min hashamayim, in which there's an intervention by the ruach hakodesh in three situations, and they're all in courtroom situations, trial situations. So, because what's going on here is a trial. They're going to execute her if she's found guilty. So this is one of them. Lehatzdik es hatzadik bidino. That in each of these three instances, there is a heavenly intervention which proves the innocence of the party on trial, or the rightness of the position of the party on trial. One, bevestino shel shem. This one here, and the shel shem ben Noah, and it's called the Besdin of Shem. We're long past him. We're already. I don't know if the yeshiva was still open, but he wasn't still around. But nevertheless, who beis hadin shadon Yehuda es Tamar? It was that Besdin in which the trial of Tamar was held. Below Shem Hoyachai, he, Shem himself, was no longer around ad oz at this time. Ela shekol Besdin shadon lefi mishpatei toroso shel Shem. But any Besdin that ruled according to the laws which were promulgated or publicized by Shem, the Torah so of Shem means the laws of Shem, right? Shem Misaron LaAvraham, because he gave them over to Avraham, Uli Yaakov, and we know that Yaakov studied in the yeshiva known as Shem Va'Aver. That was the name played. Huh? Okay, but since Shem originated the institution, and since the laws were known as the Semitic laws, if you will, so we know that Yaakov knew that, so Nikra came. Therefore, it had that name. Al Shem Mechokeka Mishpatim, according to the one who promulgated the laws, umiyased es beis hadin, and who instituted the court known as the court of shame. Okay, that's one. We're going to get into details in a moment. We're just telling you what are the three. The beis dino shel Shmuel, morning Shmuel. In the beis din of Shmuel Hanavi. And the third one is Bevestino Shel Shlomo, in the court of Shlomo, HaMelech. Okay, so the first one, Bevestino Shel Shem, in the Besdin of Shem, it says as follows, Vayaker Yehuda, Vayomer Tzadka Mimeni. Yehuda recognized the objects, and he said, Tzadka Mimeni. I'm not going to translate it again, we just went through that. Af Shehu Omer Tzadka, even though he says, oh, you're right, he says, Shehu makir es hachafotzim shebiyada. So she's holding these three objects she produces. She says, I'd like to introduce into evidence exhibits A, B, and C. Okay. Vehu modeh shehem shelo. And he admits that they indeed are his. Aval hu omer mi meni. But he adds, mimeni. Mimeni hi me'uberes. Minayin hu yodea. That was the question we raised earlier. How does he know it's his? Shema bo eleho adam nusaf. Maybe there was somebody else after him, some other person. Elo, mahu shehakasuv omer mimeni. But what is the pasuk telling us by using the term mimeni? Rabbi Yirmiyah. B'shem Rabbi Shmuel Barav, Barav Yitzchok, Omar Yotzo'o Baskol V'omra Mimeni. A Baskol is the one who announced Mimeni. Okay? So, presumably the Baskol said it in Yehuda's voice when he says Tzadka, and then the Baskol interjects Mimeni. Okay? Because what did we say? We said, according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, that there are three instances of divine intervention in a trial. So, this is one. Mimeni yotzu hadvarim ha'ela. From me, who's from me? Mimeni. Whose voice is now saying, from me? Is it Yehuda's voice, or is it Hashem's voice? Is it from me with a small M, or from me with a capital M? Okay? Mimeni Yotzu Hadvarim Ho'ela. These events came about through me, and I attest Hashem. You could look at it that way. Hashem is saying, Mimeni, I'm the one who says it's his, and who, right, and who orchestrated the events. Mita'amim Shehem Kivushim. These are hidden, concealed matters. Utmunim Imi B'machshevosai. These are why this all happened the way it did, because it's my plan, my hidden plan.
Nice question.
Yeah.
She testified, whoever, like the court cases, she's saying, whoever these belong to, that's the father of my child.
Correct.
So why does she need Yehuda to confirm that?
Because she hasn't named, because who's gonna, no one has come forward to say that, no one's claimed it, yeah.
No, but he in response, he's saying, yeah, those are mine. So, if you were a jury, you'd say, wait a minute, she said, whoever these belong to, that's the father.
Right.
He's claimed ownership, therefore, he's the father. What do you need the boss called to confirm?
That you can say they were stolen.
Yeah. Whatever. Or that they belong to someone else. Right. If it were somebody else, then she'd be guilty of znus. This way...
Is she saying that? Do we say she's a liar?
No. She is trying her best not to embarrass Yehuda by saying it outright. She is innocent. She's willing to take the punishment if he doesn't come forward. Right?
No,
the only way she's innocent is if it's Yehuda, if Yehuda is the father.
But by reference, she's saying whoever this belongs to.
Yeah, but they don't know who it belongs to unless he comes forward.
And he said they are mine, right? Is it kosher?
No, he said sadka.
So if you take the kosher, many means the items are mine, then that's acceptable, right?
Mm-hmm. We said earlier, he could have said something like Sheli. But he said Mimeni. It's the terminology that triggers the medrash here.
The items are the point of children, the pregnancy. Is the that's what Mimeni is the book.
Now,
sure,
we learned before that there was one svara that said it means only the items are his.
Yeah, all right.
Right, and that's why the divine intervention is needed to supply the to verify that the baby is his, because he can't know that for sure. Right? That was the whole point.
The Pasuk actually says that it was Yehuda says, Yehuda was the judge and the jury in this case.
It was up to him to file charges.
He may have been the judge and the jury too. You know,
not necessarily the jury, but the prosecutor. He's the prosecutor.
Yehuda gasped the Torah's of shame from his body.
Not just him. Right? It's not just him. It's because it's his daughter-in-law. It's in his household.
The judgment that she should be burned. But then when he gets it, he says...
Whoops.
He says, whoops, I'm involved in it, and I've also decided that she should not be burned. That she's innocent. The way I decided that she was guilty.
Yeah, it's my fault. It's my fault that this happened. That's what he's saying. I mean, this is a big test. This is the test that makes Yehuda worthy of leadership and worthy of being the progenitor of Mashiach. Every leader has to be tested. We see that all the time. Well, this is his big moment. His first big moment.
And it's also possible that he says something meant that. When she says, this is the guy who I got pregnant from. So
no, she's not. She's saying,
I know that this...
She's saying, I know who the father is.
Right, there's no one else.
Well, she doesn't, but she can't say that. Well, she can.
She can.
But we don't know that. But we can't know that.
But he has to accept it because he sees all along she's right.
But again, maybe he knows he had relations, but how does he know it's her baby?
That's his baby.
that's his baby, right? How does he know? So we need, instead of, in lieu of a DNA test, we have a Boskol to tell us that it is so. Okay? Mitoch shehoisot snuyo beveis chomiho, it says. We know that she was not the type of person to go running around, and therefore he probably realizes that it couldn't be from somebody else. It had to be him, because she's been living in his house all the time. So when what other possibility was there? But still,
except
it's not definitive. Except with that exception.
Well,
but he didn't know it at the time when she became pregnant. All he saw was his pregnant daughter-in-law, and he didn't know who it was that he was with. That's the whole thing. But it's a bizarre set of events, and yet it brings about Mashiach. I always like to paraphrase the Maharal's concept of this, because we see things happen that are very bizarre, the way it's continued through David HaMelech, the way it's continued through Rus. And he always says that extraordinary ends require extraordinary means. It's just a phrase to say what basically his idea, that Mashiach is not something ordinary, and therefore it cannot come about through just normal way. And so these strange things orchestrated from heaven are how unusual and extraordinary events come about. And therefore, Tetzei Malchus based on it, Mashiach. And from this is Hashem's idea. That Yehuda doesn't necessarily know this, but Hashem knows, the Baskol knows. Kach Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Osam, those simonim, tiyeh mi'idim al ma shebegolui. They will attest to give evidence of that which is revealed. The ani, the baskol, and I, by way of a baskol, me'id olav ma shebeseser, and I will fill in that which is hidden. So we see that divine intervention. But again, it's a tricky phrase, because whose voice is speaking? Is it Yehuda speaking, or is it Hashem speaking either through Yehuda or in Yehuda's voice? Okay.
No, that's only Lahalocha.
Right. Here's the question of it, right, matters of opinion versus matters of fact. Remember, this is only one incident. Let's see the other incidents. Remember, we said there are three such instances. Bevesti no show.
This was before Moshe Rabbeinu, so Baskol did make a difference. The only reason it's your aim of Gish in the Baskol is because it's already told in the Gish.
So I'm going to show you that the other two instances were already post Matan Torah, so it that's not really going to be a factor. But what will be a factor? What will be a factor is matters of opinion versus matters of fact. So, yeah. So the Baskol could intervene to establish a matter of fact.
Right.
Okay. The Beis Dino Shel Shlomo, in Shlomo's Beis Din, as everybody knows this story, Kishabu Elov Ladin. Shtei Noshim Shiyodu Bonim Bevayasachod, the mothers, the two mothers and the babies, right? Who Echod Nimsaw Meis, and one baby had died. The Kol Achas Mehem Amra Sheli Hachai, and each one claimed that the live child was theirs. What do you say, the Solomonic decision? That's why it's called that. Although it's probably a misnomer, but it's convenient. Vahu nisaw, and he tested Ligzor Eshachai Lishnayim. He tested them by way of saying, let's split the difference here, right? Cut the baby in half. Lechaluka. Ve'achas mehen hisnagdo lekach mitok rakamav al hayelin. And one said, no, let let her have the child. Don't kill the child out of being merciful. The Oz, Bayana Melech Vayomer, Pasuk says, the king responded, Shlomo said, to new law, es hayilud hachai, award the live child to her. He imo, he says, she is its mother. Again, v'acharei kol hanisayon hazeh, after all of this trial, adayin yesh lomar, you still are left with the question, shehi ma'arima la'asos kein. Maybe she was pulling a reverse, right? Maybe she did it in order to. Maybe she figured out the game, and she was playing the game, and she saw through his trick, and she was playing it so she would be the winner and be awarded the child. So how do you know for sure? K'day lehis kazos ki rachemet ki merachemes olav, and she. Maybe she was only feigning that she had pity on the child, right? Beoser, excessive rachamim, lezakos bo, and therefore she would be given greater merit, greater credit in the trial. But Dayan, mi omar leShlomo beedus berurah. Who could clarify 100% to Shlomo? She'achein he imo. Again, no DNA test, right? So it's similar in that way. How do you know for sure who is the mother? Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, b'shem Rabbi Shmuel. What's that?
Who is the father?
No, in this case,
it's the mother now.
By Shlomo, who's the mother?
Who's the mother of the
child? So the same Tana we mentioned earlier said Shehoisa Bas Kol Tzovachas Va'omeres He Imo Vadai. For sure, this one is the mother. So the Bas Kol again intervenes and confirms. Naturally, the strategy used by Shlomo was certainly a very wise one, a very clever one. But for absolute confirmation, that you don't have. For that, he says, a bas kol gives you the absolute confirmation that that's the right one. That's the second instance. The third instance, the veis dino shel Shmuel. All right? And when Shmuel himself was not so much on trial, but he was being pressured by the people, kasher le'ezik naso, in his old age, osaf elof his kol Yisrael, he gathered around the whole kol Yisrael, v'hichriz, and he announced, hineni, behold, anuvi, answer me. And then he goes on to say, eshor, mi lakachti, anyone, if I stole their shore, come forward. V'chamor mi lakachti, if I took anybody's donkey, come forward. Yes, me ashakti. Did I oppress anyone? Come up front. Yes, yeah. Yes, me ratzosi. Not sure what that means. What? Yeah. So what does that mean? Me ratzosi. Yeah. So what does it mean? What does it mean? It's me ratzosi.
People are accusing him of malfeasance.
Yeah, I know. Generally. The specific word I don't. Did I favor? Okay, fair enough. Miyad me lakachti kofer, and did I take ransom from anyone? The elim enai bo. And did I look away from someone who had a legitimate taina? V'ashiv lochem. And if I did any of those things, I will return, I will repay that person. Vayomru. Of course, none would he step forward because he never did any of those things. Vayomru. And they said, Lo ashaktona, you did not oppress us. Velo ratzasona, you didn't unfairly.
Never
took any bribes. Never tried. Right. That's the next part. Velola kachto miyad ishmu umo. You never took anything from anyone. And then it says, "Vayomer aleihem." He then responds. He said to them, "Eid Hashem bochem." Hashem testifies to this, attests to this. the Ad Meshicho, and to his anointed one, Hayom Hazeh, Ki Lo Matzasa Biyadi Me'uma, that heaven will attest to the fact that, confirm the fact that I never did any of these things. I never committed any wrongs to you. Vayomer Eid, and he said Eid. What do you mean? He said Eid. How does he know what Hashem attests to? Okay, he's a Navi, but really, is he authorized to say such a thing? Vayoha kasuv tzarich lamar vayomru. It should have said, the people then responded. Vikasuv vayomer. But no, it says that in the singular. Miomar, who said it? If it wasn't the people, and Shlomo couldn't have said it because he couldn't have known that. I'm sorry, Shmuel. Elo yotzasa basko v'omra aid. Basko comes forward and says, aid, I testify. I confirm. Right. Ukolomar. Atem mi'idim al ha'golui. You, the people, can attest to that which is revealed. You know if any incidents happened or not to you. V'ani ha'id al nistarim. I, Hashem, will attest to that which is hidden. Okay, so we see three so-called trials or situations where the Baskol provides confirmation of something which could not have been absolutely known. Okay. Okay, that's it for this piece. Okay, let's go on to page Pei Zion. Okay, now here, we're back to the story of Yosef in the house of Potiphar. And it says, Vayhi kehayom hazeh, and it happened on that day, and by the way, vayhi, there's a general principle. Vayhi means look out, trouble ahead. Right? Vayavo habaisa lasos malakto, and he came into the house to do his work. The ain ish me'anshe habayis sham babayis, and there is no one of the household at home. Now this phrase is what triggers the comment of the Medrash. As follows. Maho hayom hazeh hamyuchad. What do you mean? What is it about this particular day? Okay. Ve'ezu melacha. And what work was he doing? Shehoisa. Shehu bo habaisa la'asosa. What work did he have to do that he had to come into the house for? Ve'loma. Lo haya ish babayas. And how come nobody was home? V'achareisho amar ve'ein ish. Once the pasuk says, right, ve'ein ish, nobody was home. So what do you have to add? Hosif lamar od me'anshei habayis. Of course, nobody from the house. If nobody was home, then nobody from the household was home, right? It's redundant. V'hosif laharich v'lamar sham. There was nobody sham babayis. It's also a word that is unnecessary, right? It could have said, V'ein ish babayis. Simple. But things aren't that simple. V'hare hadavor temuha. And this is what triggers the Medrash's comment here. Because what's with this language? V'chi efshar sheyeh kein. Is it possible that nobody was around? Ki beso shel oso ha'ish, because the house of this particular person, meaning Potiphar, shehu sar beveso, who was an important official, shel paro, velo bayis gadol, and he had a mansion, right? He had servants, he had all kinds of, he had staff, he had all kinds of folks there. V'hu mishtayer belo ish, and there was absolutely nobody around? How is that even possible? The hello, ain bias me'uchales ba'avodim and
ba'avodim rabim,
and doesn't a household like that have many servants? And where was everybody? Misro Khan, Khalil Me'adam, so it should be emptied of absolutely everybody, nobody at all around. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. Frequently, those two have differences of opinion. So here, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. Each one gives nosnim lekach teshuvos shonos. They each give a different answer to this question. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Zehu shenemar kan bayhi bayom, bayhi hayom. It says, or kihayom, it says, but specifically focusing on hayom ham yuchod shelohim. It was their holiday. Oso hayom, yom chogo hoyo, says the Gemara. It was the Geisha holiday, the Egyptian holiday. Yom, the Yom Nibul, it was called. Well, Nibul here is meant in a bilashon hafucho, in a sarcastic kind of way, because we know Nibul or Noval means something bad, right? You know, lashon shel ganai, something that is denigrates the holiday. Ukolomar yom shevach v'kilos. It was a day in Egypt of praise and song and yom zivukul and making sacrifices to their god. Shel hakorban that shel nilus. They worshipped the Nile. We know that they considered the Nile River to be a deity, and for obvious reasons, because there's no water supply, there's very little fertile land in Egypt, and the way any land at all became fertile was because the Nile overflowed. So they're basically their living, their food dependent on the Nile. So therefore, they worshipped the Nile. Okay, so they had a holiday for giving. I don't want to say Thanksgiving, but giving thanks to the Nile for providing that sustenance. Shehem machzikim oso le'elil, because they deified the river. The odim oso, and they worshipped it. B'todos, with offers of thanks. B'yom shehu ole al gedosov, on that day when it would start to overflow its banks. It was a banking holiday, right? Bank holiday. B'oso yom hoyo, and that's the day in which this incident occurred. It occurred because she knew that the holiday was coming, right? So she saw the opportunity there. B'holchu hakol, and everybody went. Well, so we'll get to that.
She was sick.
Well, we'll get to that. Look, the vase avodas kochavim shalahem. So they went to their temple, right? Everybody went. L'ros betekes hachagol, because this was the custom of the observance of that holiday. V'hu lo halach. Now he did not go. To put it in modern terms, you know, we have the Goyish holiday that's coming up. So Yosef, he didn't go to the church, and he didn't go to the office Christmas party either.
He went to work.
He went to work. He went to work. No, he went.
He covered the Goyish
clients. We'll get to that. We'll get to that too. But those of us who've had to resist office holiday parties and other things can all, I think we can identify with that sort of thing. Okay. The Rabbi Nechemya, the other opinion, Omar, lo bilvad shelebeis elo heihem lo halach Yosef. Not only did he not, as I said, did not go to the temples, elo afilo leiro e simcha be'alma lo halach. That is really, that's where I should have inserted that comment. But he didn't go to the parties either. Okay, ve'al tamar shemin na'ah eishes potifar esatzma, and don't say that the Potiphar's wife refrained from going milaleches el beis Elohehem, and don't say that she did not go to the temple service. Ella yom shel teatron. It was matinee day, exactly.
Matinee Wednesday.
I'll see you Wednesday.
Exactly where I was going. You know, I just want to bring up this point. I think we brought it up in Shir before, but there's a great misconception. There's a popular misconception that when Chazal talked about theaters and circuses, you know, you always hear that expression. There are people today who think that, who said it's usher to go to take your kids to the circus on Chol HaMoed. This is utter nonsense and utter misunderstanding of what Chazal meant, because as we'll see here, theaters and circuses, Chazal in the time of the Medrash used the Roman customs, the Roman culture, because that was the modern culture of the day, and they were talking in order to explain things to the people in terms that they would understand. They would understand the Roman idea of theaters and circuses. Theaters, as we'll see, were productions that satirized and made fun of good values of society, and we're basically we see a lot of that today too, where productions are aimed at tearing down the values of society. And circuses were not, you know, with clowns and animals, they were with animals, but they were gladiatorial contests in which were not healthy either for the gladiators or for the animals, and that kind of lion seven, Christians nothing, at halftime, famous line there, the score at halftime, but the idea was of this sort of cruelty was also unfit for Jews to attend. That's what Chazal meant about, you know, about assimilating into that sort of culture or the culture of of that sort of theater. That's what it's talking about. So again, it's explained here similarly. Chatzer Gadol Shel Schok. It was a big amphitheater, let's say. You know what those look like, in which they would not comedy but satire. Hatzofim Yoshvim Sivivo Bishiroz Zu Lamalazu, amphitheater style. We know what that, as I said, we know what that is. Bitsofim Eleha Milamalu Lamatan, you look from above down to the stage. Alham Amisvakim, or onto the games. The players. Right, the players. Yeah.
It's the theater.
So there are people who, so the players are the cast. Hamisachakim sham biyamim miyuchodim, and they would put on these productions on specific occasions. So yom haya, and that's what that day was. V'holchu akol l'rosov, and everybody went to see the production. V'hu lo halach, but he did not go. Being a nice Jewish boy, this was not his sort of entertainment, and he did not go. He didn't want to participate. But he, Amram Lahan, and she, Ashes Potiphar, she said, "Ki cholahi, I don't feel good. I think I'm going to sit this one out." And so that's what she tells the husband. Right? What? Yeah, I have a headache. Well, she didn't tell that to Yosef, did she? Ki amra bilibo, because she thought to herself, Ein li yom shenizkak li Yosef, I can't get him alone. Any other day, I won't have any opportunity to have him. Ki kayom hazeh, that's ki hayom hazeh, becomes kayom hazeh. I will never have as good an opportunity as today. That's the term here. Vinish tai rahi, and so she stayed home. But huwi mo babayas, and now he is alone in the house, only with her. He doesn't know that yet until she makes her move. But hu lo yashav batel, and he wasn't just sitting around doing nothing. Fact that he didn't go to the theater. Afilu bayom zeh, even on a holiday he was working. Elo bayavo habayso lasos milakto, and he went into the house to do his work. So what was his work? Milacha min hamilacha shel. He had various tasks that he did, and so he was going to do some of that. Hamiyuchados Le'ish Mimuna al Kol HaBayis, because he was responsible for all the goings on in the house. Shehein O Lifakeach al Maasei Avodim, or maybe he was supposed to supervise, maybe one of his tasks was to supervise the servants, except there were no servants in
the project management. Yes.
Project management, fine.
Was the butler.
A goat. Nah, it was much more than that. Much, much more than that. O Lasok Bacheshbonos. Or he was checking the books. He was doing the books. I know someone. I don't know if you know Professor Zvi Davis, but he once wrote in the Journal of the History of Accounting a little historical footnote. He says Joseph was the first auditor. Based on the Targum Onkelos on this phrase, he was checking the accounts. He was auditing. So he quotes Targum Onkelos, and he said this was the first auditor in recorded history. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
No. Right. The Ein Avodim Babayis, and there were no servants in the house. Bo Sosha at that moment. Hare. So there was nobody to supervise, so he went over the books. Uke Targum Onkelos and Targum Yonasan Khan. Okay, there's the reference I just mentioned. The Ilu, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman Amar, and Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman said as follows, Kisha Hakasuf Amer Khan Vayavo Habaisa Lasos Melakto, when the Pasuk says he went to the house to do his work, Vayavo Habaisa, Beloshon bia. Ooh, there's a code word there. It's the fact that it says vayovo indicates something was going to happen. L'ramez shelashen bia nichnas habaisa. He goes so far as to say that he knew she was there, and he went into the house knowing that something could happen. Knowing, after all, she was after him day after day after day, and he was tempted to do something about it. The hare lasos melachto, and he takes this expression to do his work, right? Vadai oso melacha ha'amura ba'inyon, that what he was going to do, what business was going to happen, was a funny business was about to happen. Shehi tovas mimenu, because she was after him. Hu nichnas habaisa lasos, and he actually, according to this opinion, went into the house with that very intent. Elo zeh shener markan v'ein ish mianshei habayis shom babayis. There was nobody of the anshei Habayis in the bias. Hoyotzarich lamar ve'ein ish babayis. Simple enough. She said nobody was home. There was no men were home. Right? Oh, ve'ein isham, and there was nobody there. Oh, ve'ein me'anshei habayisam, or none of the household was there. Doesn't say any of that. Who ma'arich mekofel lamar ve'ein ish me'anshei habayis shom babayis. There's that repetitive language. L'ramez, v'lomar, to imply, ki bo sosho, at that time, bodak es atzmo. He did a little introspective thinking about his situation. Ma'yu totso osav. What would be the outcome, im yishmalo, if he does listen to her? V'lo matza atzmo ish. And he didn't, if he did listen to her, he would no longer be an ish. Right? It says v'ein ish. He couldn't respect himself in the morning or any other time. Im yase milachto, if he does this business. Lo yechoshev od ish. He would no longer be an ish, meaning a tzaddik. Nimne b'cheshbon me anshei habayis. He would no longer be a member of the household. Shom babayis, whose household? the Beis Yisrael, he could no longer consider himself a member of the Shvatim if he gave in to this temptation. And because of this good thought that he had, this proper thought of his conscience, Matsa es atzmo ein ish. But he realized that if he would give in to her, then he would be no longer an ish. No longer an ish often is not just describing an ordinary person, but somebody of importance. Moshe HaIsh, he's the man. He's somebody of importance. So, right, exactly. And someone who, almost synonymous with tzaddik in that context. Okay, so that's it for this piece. Do we need to take a break, or yeah, a little bit? Okay, so we'll take a break for the. Okay, so I'd like to continue with the Gur Aryeh. It's marked as page Reish Chaf. Pardon me. Okay, so now we're in the story of Yosef and his brothers, and in Gur Aryeh, you guys know it's Gur Aryeh is a commentary on Rashi and Chumash, in which we get a further analysis into what Rashi says. Okay, so the pasuk has told us that the Bata lechu v'nahargehu, let's kill him, v'nashlichehu b'yachad ha-baros, and let's toss him into one of the pits, v'yomarnu, and then we'll say chayo ra'ah acholosu, a wild animal ate him, v'nireh ma yiyech alamosav, and then we'll see what happens with his dreams. V'yishma Ruvain listened. Vayatzilehu miyadam, vayomer lo nakenu nafesh. He saved him, and he said, let's not harm a soul. Vayomer alehem. This is the key post. Vayomer alehem Reuven. What did Reuven actually say to them? Al tishpuchu dam. Don't shed blood. Hashlichu aso el abor. Let's toss him into this. Habor hazeh, into this pit, asher b'midbor, which is in the wilderness, v'yad al tishlechu bo, and not lay a hand on him. Laman hatzil also, in order to save him, miyadam, from their hand, l'hashivo alaviv, to return him to his father. Rashi, laman hatzil also, pasuk ha'beis, ruach hakodesh me'ida al ru'uvein. Ruach HaKodesh is the one who testifies, here we go again, with Ruach HaKodesh, testifies al Ruvain, Shalo Amar Zos, because he didn't say that, Ela Lehatzil also, but rather to save Yosef. Because look at the pasuk. Where does the quote end in what he says? Vayomer Alehem, quote. Vayomahel Ruvain, quote, Al tishbuchu dam, don't shed blood. Hashlichu also elabor hazeh, asher ba midbor. The yad al tishlichu bo. Does he say, that has to be where the quote ends, because he's not going to say, Laman hatzil also. That's not what he's saying to them. Who's saying that? So it seems to be that Ruach HaKodesh, which means that when the pasuk is written. It's written. It's divine, and there's an interpolation that is inserted by a Kodesh Baruch Hu that tells us the reason. Laman hatzil asomi adam lashivo alaviv. All right. So that's what it means. What Ruach HaKodesh is telling us this. Sheyavo hu v'yaleu misham, and so that Reuven's intent was to double back and take him out of there. Amar, he said, what was he thinking? Ani bechor v'gadol shebekulon. I'm the oldest. Lo yitle ha-sirchon elabi. And who's going to take the rap for this if something happens to Yosef? Me. And I don't want to take the rap for it. Okay. Now look below at the Gurari note Lamed Gimel. Ruach HaKodesh Me'ida. Now we have to go to work here. Perush She'ein HaKosuf Ratzel Amar Shehashem Yisborach Asah Zeh. You can't say that it means what Rashi is saying is that Hashem did this Sheyamar Ruvain came in order so that Ruvain should say this Kedei Lahatzil also. Of all who, meaning Ruvain, Lo Kivein Davor Lidavor Hazeh. Ruvain did not intend for this to happen, as what's said in the pasuk, Rak Hayakav Anasosha Lo Yeshafim Dam Biyadam. Is all he wanted is to avoid them directly committing murder. That was all he wanted. Rak Shehu Yisborach Hayom Misavev HaDavor Hazeh. But rather, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intent was to bring about this event, Me'ito, Kedei Sheyeh Nitzal. Hashem was the one who staged the event so that he, Yosef, would be saved. Reuven did not really have an intention to save him, just to avoid the blame for what would happen. Note 196. Perush, Sheruv, huh? Yeah.
His motive was just self-protection.
Yeah, because who says who's because it's ambiguous when you read the pasuk, the man hatzil also and okay, and we'll see further. Sheruven Omar est divarov. Ruven said what he said to them. Bichdei limnoa sheechov yishpachu dam biyadam. All he wanted to avoid was direct, hands-on bloodshed. Ach. He was not interested in rescuing Yosef. The manatzil aso is not Reuven's intention. It's God's intention. It was Hashem that caused Reuven to say what he said. Leman hatzil aso. That's Hashem's intention, not Reuven's intention. This is how you have to understand Rashi. Then he turns around and says, "Vizelo yitachein." It's not. You can't interpret that. You can't look at it that way. She'im kain lo hayo amer acharav lashivo el aviv. How do you? Where does that come from? Was Reuven's intention to return him? Was it God's intention to return him to his father? No, because deho Hashem yisborach. Hey, vi aviv el Yosef. Just the opposite happened. Hashem didn't return Yosef to his father. He brought his father to Yosef. So clearly, that can't be Hashem's thinking at the end of this pasuk. So, lo shehishivo el aviv, ela zehoyo kavonas Reuven. But actually, it was Reuven who intended to return him to his father. Shehoyo, we go back and forth. We're going back and forth in this analysis. Because it was, in fact, Reuven's intention to return him to his father. V'im tomar, and if you want to say, Eichayah kavanaso shel Reuven lahatzilo. How can you say it was Reuven's intent to save him? Gahare hayah bo nechashim v'akrabim. There were snakes and scorpions in that pit, as the pasuk says, right? And b'mesechus Yevamos, and it says in the Gemara in Yevamos, we haven't reached there yet. It's ways down the road, 121. Tanya, nafal labor mileon nechashim v'akrabim me'edim olav lehasi es ishto. If somebody falls into a pit which is full of snakes and scorpions. Even if you don't see it happen, he's a goner, and the wife can remarry. If you can testify that you saw him fall into this pit, and there was no getting him out, he's a goner. That's the Kushiyas HaRaim. The Raim is Rab Mizrahi, who is a commentary on Rashi, and Gorye, who comes afterward, often defends Rashi from questions which are posed by the Mizrahi. But here, he asks, but there were, so you have a Gemara that says that he's a goner. And here we're told that the pit had snakes and scorpions in it. Ain't that kasha? This is not a big deal. This is not a big question. The hasam kamar labor over there, meaning in the Gemara where it says nafal labor, mele'o nichoshim rakmei. It was full of snakes and scorpions. Somehow I conjured up one of those Indiana Jones scenes. You know, the Devada Yimisuhu. So if it's full of snakes and scorpions,
he has no chance.
He's a goner. That's what the Gemara is telling us. A volcan, this is not the same thing. Lo haya habor milei'o. It wasn't full of snakes and scorpions. Elo hayu nechoshim v'akrabim. There were snakes and scorpions there. Not as many. V'kach mashma hasam deka omar. So, therefore, if you the implication of the Gemara is, which said labor libor milea nikoshim ve'akrabim mashma davka milea, only if it's really full. Abol eno milea, but if it's not full, lo, not, in other words, like our situation here. She'im, next page. She'im yesh shom me'atim, if there were just some, a few, yachol hu lehamisosam, then he has a shot at survival. He could kill a few of them, right? Okay. So you'd be a goner. Okay. Aval bar milea efshar, but if it were full, there's no chance of survival. That's what the Gemara is saying, as opposed to this situation here. So the original question was, if Ruvain's idea was, let's throw him in the pit, and there's snakes and scorpions in there, it doesn't. How can we say he wanted to rescue him when he threw him into this pit? No, it wasn't a sure thing. He had a chance for survival. Baha, de ka'amar Yehuda, and when Yehuda says ma betza ki narog es achinu v'kisinu es damo, when he tells the brothers, what profit do we get if we kill our brother and we cover up his blood, all right? Which Yosef Yomus Bivado'os, says the note, that in which he would surely die, Kibor Machmas HaNechoshim Bakrabim Shabo, in Kain Yikshe Shuv, Echoyo Kavonasa. Right, so we're back to that question. Lo Bishvil.
1 minute. I mean, I understand.
Yeah.
This is more insult as well, but the Abarbanel says at the end of the passage is the trigger here. Mayu Halabinere, Mayu Halomosov. In other words, I'm throwing him in this pit with the snakes and the scorpions, and if his dreams are true, if his dreams are meant to come true, then he will survive the snakes and the scorpions. I know there's snakes and scorpions in there, but if his dreams are meant to come true, nothing will happen to him. And if the snakes and scorpions kill him, then the dreams were just the ravings of a lunatic.
Question.
Kid who had...
So let me ask.
I mean,
Wait. Is Reuben verbalizing this, or is he just?
That's not Reuben.
Yeah, that's Reuben.
Is he verbalizing this, or is it just a thought process?
But actually, Chayu biakara poros.
After killing him,
that's the brother.
It's okay. Discussion is fine.
That's what
we're here for.
Well, that's why the quote over there says that he had this, you know, misguided thoughts all the time. He had a great thought, but he never carried out properly. In other words, whatever he thought, he had good ideas. But the actions, the carry out,
and that's why he ultimately wasn't the leader.
Right. That's what the Gemara says.
Okay. So when, let's get back to that. So when Yehuda says, we don't get anything out of killing him. Lo bishvil nechoshim bakrim. He wasn't referring to the nechoshim bakrabim. The efshar shelo yimisehu, because there was certainly a possibility of survival. Ela bishvil devadai sofo lamus. But rather, he was thinking of something else, that he was sure to die. Dehare ein lo mayim umazon. He would starve to death. This is the Ames Kasha again, the Mizrahi Kasha. He would starve to death in there. So okay, so the snakes and the scorpions wouldn't get him, but starvation would. Umnam. Now, it says in note 199, bo levo'er es shitas ha'achim. He comes to explain what the brothers are thinking. Shafal pisha hevinu shehashlochas Yosef labor hagrum lemisa so machmas ha'eder mizonos. Even though it was clear that if he were left there to starve, that he would die. Mikom makom hadifu hatzah zu miasher luchuvena hargehu. That this suggestion was in lieu of and let's go and kill him. V'hadafu hutzarich biyar. And we have to see what their intent actually was here. Amnam Ruvein Amar Lahem Sha'al Yishpuhu Dam Biyadam. This is what Ruvein was telling them. Let's not kill him with our own hands. Avol Gromas Miso, but indirectly, if they are the cause of death, lo, that they could get away with, because there is such a halacha, but divorce, because it's, let's see, no, 200. Lo pirshu ligrom misas Yosef, lakako achim lo hayu misnadim. They didn't object. Barak, lo hayu rotsim lahargo biyadayim. They didn't want to directly be involved in his bloodshed. That's what they were looking to avoid. V'dvorzeh shlichu el bor, by throwing him into the pit, ein zerak grom mas misa. It's only an indirect way of killing him. The ein chayav misa al zeh, and they would not. Right, they would. That's right. As we'll get right there. Because if you, it says right on the next line. The next line, the mishase kalbo shel chaverov bechaverov patur. If he
you sick a dog.
Sicks the dog on somebody, then he is putter.
But
he didn't do it.
Because they sold, they kidnapped
that's
him and they
later.
Sold him.
Right now we're not up to that.
Okay. This is Gemara in Baba Kama that quote came from. Right. Dimlo came. Because
he's a hitman and there's always one witness, never two, they can never prove it. So after they keep bringing him to trial two, three times, you're a three time loser on any Avera, they don't kill you, but they put you in a cell without any food or any water.
Right.
They leave you there for a few days. He said, oh, we didn't do it. Okay. Yeah, that's later, so his stomach blows up more quickly. He's dry, and his stomach blows up.
Yeah, right. Right.
And he plots.
Okay. So Dimlo came, Kishamar Lohem, if not so, Kishamar Lohem Ruvain Hashlichu Aso Alabar, when Ruvain suggests, let's toss him into the pit. Bavadai Das Ruvain Hoyola Hatzilo, and if Ruvain's intent was certainly to rescue him, Vala Loso Min Habor, and to pick him up out of the pit of Olheim, my Salkadaita. What were they thinking? Hare Yomus Bera'avsham. That's what they were thinking, that he should just die of starvation and dehydration over there. Elohayo Amer Lohem Agishbuchu Dom Biyadom, directly. Of Olo Hikpidu Al Gromas Miso, but they didn't object to an indirect form of killing him. Okay, that's the end of this piece. Now we have one more. This next piece, which is on the page Reish Lamed Vav. This goes back again to Yehuda and Tamar at the beginning of the incident. This is a classic example of well, I'll show you in just a moment. Vayehi ba'esahi vayehi yudam me'esah echov vayehi ad ish adulami ushmo chira. Next pasuk. Vayar shom Yehuda bas ish kanani. Yehuda saw over there the daughter of an Ishkenani. What is an Ishkenani?
Tagra.
Tagra. One word. Yeah. A one-word Rashi. A Tagra is a merchant. A socher. Could be somebody who goes a traveling salesman. Okay? It's a term that's found in a number of places to mean an occupation rather than a nationality. Okay? One word, Rashi. We know Rashi is famous for being brief. But a single word can ignite a whole, can trigger this whole discussion that we're going to see now as it plays out in the Gur Aryeh. Kenani, Tagra. Velo kemashma'o. So what is Rashi saying? It's not what it sounds like. De'im kein lama hutzrach lemichtav bas ish kenani. Why would the Pesach have to say, if it were an actual, if it were a Canaanite rather than a merchant, why would it have to say Kenani? Mistama, Kaven Shiba Eretz Kenan Hoya, this takes place in Canaan, so he's a Canaanite. But, you know, who else was there besides Yaakov and his family? Who else was there? A bunch of Canaanites. Shekol Horetz Kenaniim Hoyu. Everybody was a Kenani. So why does the Pasuk have to tell us that? Therefore, that would seem to be the reason why Rashi tells us, no, it's not a Canaanite, it's a Socher. Okay. Ubemesechet Pesachim, Isa, Efshar Bo, interesting question. Gemara says, Efshar Bo, Avraham Behisir Esbeno, Shalo Yisaw Canaanis? Avraham warned his son not to marry a Canaanis. Right? And then, Bo Yitzchak, and Yitzchak comes along, Behisir Esbeno, Shalo Yisaw Canaanis, don't marry a Canaanis. But who Yisaw Canaanis? So Yehuda is going to marry a Canaanis? Can't we assume that Yaakov told his sons don't marry a Canaanis? So if that's the case, why does Rashi have to even tell us that it was a Socher? Since the question posed is, isn't it obvious that it had to be a Socher because it couldn't be a Canaanis? Because how would the Ovos allow their sons, Yaakov, allow his sons to marry a Canaanis? That's the Gemara's question. Elatagra, but rather, obviously, it was meant as a merchant. Note 2. Hare, shebi'aru, shemidubor bisocher. It's obvious. Below the Canaanis. Not a Canaanite. Lo mitzad es borazo shel ha-gurarye kol oretz kanaanim hayu. Not because, of course, everybody there was a Canaanite. So that's not the Gemara's reasoning. The Gemara's reasoning is, how could he allow a Canaanite to marry one of his sons? Omnam leperish Rashi de lekamen beparshas Vayechi. We see later on in Parshas Vayechi, referring to Yaakov, so Omar, Al Yisro Osi Echad Mibnei Bneichem. Don't let my grandsons carry my coffin when you go and bury me in Eretz Yisrael. Why? Shehem Mibnos Kanan. Because as in note 3, you see, Rashi says, Ki Yaakov Tziva Sherak Bonov. Yisu also. Only his sons, not his grandsons, lachar moso, below b'nei b'nov mishum shehem mibnos kanan, because their mothers are Canaanites. Okay? Ki hashvatim nosu kananios, the shvatim married Canaanite women. Which I'm sure you'll say, what? And doesn't that conflict with other things? Get to those things. Okay? Harei shenasu kananios. So apparently, according to that understanding of what happened in Vayechi, that the Shvatim did marry kananios. V'im kein, nuchal lamar kan, tifsiv kanani kamashma'o. So why can't kanani here, bas ish kanani, Why does it have to mean a socher? Why can't it mean a Canaanite if we have evidence that later on that shows that in fact they married Canaanios? Bitzarich lomar, hocha, the medakdek shehi bas tagra. Here where it's Rashi is being very specific to say it was a socher. Lo bishvil, Rashi's reasoning, the eich avru al tzavo as avihem, because not because, as the Gemara and Tzachim implied, that the reason is because they were forbidden to, because all the avos forbade such marriages. Ela shekosha amai husrach lamar bas ish kanani. What Rashi's thinking is, why does it have to say bas ish kanani? Ki stama kulam kananiim huyu. Because they're in Canaan, not according to the logic of the Gemara, but according to this other logic. And what about that question that Gemara posed, that the Avos didn't allow, the Abraham, Yitzchak did not allow? Hainu aliba demand Omar to Omar to almost no dos im ashvatim. Now we know, everybody knows this interpretation, that each of the Shvatim had twin sisters. So this, according to this opinion. So according to this opinion, they were not allowed, Yaakov did not allow his sons to marry Canaanios. And they married one another's twin sisters. If that's the case, then Rashi would be correct, according to that opinion, Rashi would be correct in saying, a socher. And not a Canaanist, because they were not allowed to marry Canaanios, according to that logic, right? Okay. The Ikar Plukta, but there's the Machlokas, the Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya, as I think I said it earlier, they're often at odds. note 5. Vehuva Barashi La'el. Oh, okay. So Rashi earlier brought up this Machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda Sivira Le Achayos to Omos no do Limashvatim. It was according to Rabbi Yehuda, they were twins, twin girls. Rabbi Nechemya Mer Kananios Hayu. Rabbi Nechemya said, no, they did marry Kananios. Upeirish Rashi Lekamon Aliba to Rabbi Nechemya. And Rashi is going according to Rabbi Nechemya. Rabbi Nechemya is the one who said Canaanios, that they were Canaanios. V'im Tamar, Rav Nechemya Svira Lei, the Canaanios are you? According to that interpretation of Rav Nechemya, that they did marry Canaanios. Tiksheh Lei, Efshar Bo Avraham, now you have in conflict with the other statement, the statement of the Gemara that says, what? The Avos objected to marrying Canaanios. V'yesh lamar, how do we answer this? V'yesh lamar, davka kasher adayin lo nadu yud beis shivte Yisrael. Only at the point where not all of the Shvatim had yet been born, shehem b'nei Yisrael, because then, once the 12 Shvatim were born, then that constitutes an entity called b'nei Yisrael, once only with the completion of the set, right? Im hayu nosim kananios lo hayu betelim beso klal Yisrael. You know that, except for Ammon and Moab, and even then, not the women, it's not forbidden to marry a Canaanis. And if you marry a Canaanis, and what he's saying is, a Canaanis would become absorbed into klal Yisrael. Under the right conditions. We'll see it tomorrow. Aval, and in fact, the note here, note 6. Zeh bimei Avraham v'Yitzchak. Shehoyah betokef o'isar. Because then, it was the strongest ban on Canaanios. Ach bimei b'nei Yaakov, hutar ho'isur. But that Isur was relaxed in the time of Yaakov. Avol kasher hoyu kol yud beis shvatim. But when the set of 12 was completed, v'nechshavu le'umah, now they're called an umah. Now they are a national entity. They're beyond just a family. K'dechsiv l'mala, etzel Shechem, because we saw in last week's parsha, Shechem ben Hamor says, v'hayinu la'am echad, will mix with you and will become a single nation. V'kodem l'chein, hayu shnei umos, before that, there were 12. They were two separate nations. So we see there's such a thing as being considered a national entity once the 12 Shvatim were born. And in note 8, it says Anshei Shechem u'bnei Yaakov kol echad u'moshe kila'atzmo. Each one was independently a national entity. Im kein shem u'mo aleihem. Miyad shenoldu hashvatim. In that case, the term a national entity took effect as soon as all of the shvatim had been born. He points out in note 9 that there are different points in time where the national unit is defined. One of them is 12 tribes. Another one is Shivim Nefesh, the family of 70. That's a different stage of nationality. And finally, Shishim Ribo, which I like to call the critical mass, that once it reaches that point, then you've reached a more advanced stage as a nation. Okay? The Kasher Nechshvu Le'uma Ein Isur. Once they reach the status of nationhood, then, if you marry a Canaanis, that Canaanis becomes absorbed into that nation and is not a separate Canaanis, not a separate entity of Canaanite, but is part of the Jewish nation, according to this idea. And therefore, there's nothing to forbid marrying a Canaanis at that point.
Weren't they all going to be killed? That was later.
No. No.
By Kibush Eretz Yisrael.
Right. We're talking about only at this point in time. We're talking about the time of the Avos now. Right? Okay?
The question that the place where all this is raised on the Pasuk of Shivan Nefesh or the Avos at the time was, if people have wives, how come they're not in the figures of seven?
That we'll get to that too. We'll get to that too. Not in great deal, but we'll touch on that. Lefisha kol hamischaber leuma harei hu keuma ubit tela etzlam legamri. So the Canaanis, by marrying into the entity known as Klal Yisrael, would then lose her nationality and be absorbed into the nationality of Klal Yisrael, lose her identity, her previous identity. V'nechshav beKlal Yisrael. The only time Canaanios were forbidden is if they did not renounce their ways, their culture, their avodah zarah, their immorality. But if they did tshuva and they accepted the values of Klal Yisrael, right? Lo, then there was no reason to forbid them. Then they were accepted. Maybe not in the time of Avram and Yitzhak, for whatever the reasons given, but certainly by this time, by the time the 12 Shvatim had already been come about. Ukudiksiv, it says in Sefer Devarim, Laman lo yimadu eschem lasos kekol hatoevos. Why is intermarriage forbidden? Because so you should not learn from their abominations and adopt their culture, their ways. But if they renounce those ways, if they do a sincere acceptance of our ways, right? Ha im asu tshuva mikablim, then they are accepted. Ukutiso ba maseches sota, as it says in the Seches Sota, the note in 13, lachar Yisrael no asu. Mutorim hem laseis kananios im halolu asu tshuva. Okay, the ukmo kain benogea lashvatim shela achar shenasu Yisrael leuma. Once it was it became a nation. So those Cananios were acceptable as wives. It's kind of, you could actually say, the issue is who is a Cananis instead of who is a Jew. Yeah. Aval, Rabbi Yehuda, the other opinion, Svirale ki shem uma, no feles gam kenal nekevos, that no, they don't lose their national identity, and he's the one who says that they had to marry twins, the twin sisters, because there was no way they would be allowed to marry Cananios, because Cananios, he says, do not lose their identity. Ulefichach, ein lamarsha hashvatim heim kamo uma. The Hager Shabbat Bahan Batel Mehem. No, he says you don't lose your identity just because you convert. Below Nikevos, because you can't consider Klal Yisrael an Ummah unless there are females as part of the Ummah. So he has the twin sisters. So they make up the Canaan, the Nikevos. Note 14, that touching on what you had said earlier. Mitzat Svarazu, Misbair, Ki Af Kasher Hoyu Shivim Nafesh, even when they had the status of 70, Einom Nech Shivim Lumo, they still are not a national entity. Ki Gam Shivim Nefesh Lo Kolalim Nikkei Vos, because even that 70 did not include any females. Now, there are different opinions as to how who makes up the difference. Who makes up the difference, right? Akash Baruch Hu or Yaakov or whatever it is. Not everybody holds. V'ein lamar ki shonem mispar shivim nefesh shenekelulu bo yocheved or Serach. Not everybody holds according to that opinion.